Chapter 53. Of my senses. Do you care for him? Do you love him? You know you don't. It will be a fanatic prostitution, God forgive me. Yes, that's what it will be. I don't love him, I must own it, in deepest remorse. But I shall try to learn to love him by obeying him. Jude argued, urged, implored. But her conviction was proof against all. It seemed to be the one thing on earth on which she was firm, and that her firmness in this had left her tottering in every other impulse and wish she possessed. I have been considerate enough to let you know the whole truth, and to tell it you myself, she said in cut tones, that you might not consider yourself slighted by hearing of it at second hand. I have even owned the extreme fact that I do not love him. I did not think you would be so rough with me for doing so. I was going to ask you. To give you away? No. To send my boxes to me if you would. But I suppose you won't. Why, of course I will. What isn't he coming to fetch you to marry you from here? He won't condescend to do that? No, I won't let him. I go to him voluntarily, just as I went away from him. We are to be married at his little church at Marygreen. She was so sadly sweet in what he called her wrong-headedness that Jude could not help being moved to tears more than once for pity of her. I never knew such a woman for doing impulsive penances as you, Sue. No sooner does one expect you to go straight on as the one rational proceeding than you double round the corner. Ah, well, let that go. Jude, I must say goodbye. But I wanted you to go to the cemetery with me. Let our farewell be there beside the graves of those who died to bring home to me the error of my views. They turned in the direction of the place, and the gate was opened to them on application. Sue had been there often, and she knew the way to the spot in the dark. They reached it, and stood still. It is here I should like to part, said she. So be it. Don't think me hard, because I have acted on conviction. Your generous devotion to me is unparalleled, Jude. Your worldly failure, if you have failed, is to your credit, rather than to your blame. Remember that the best and greatest among mankind are those who do themselves no worldly good. Every successful man is more or less a selfish man. The devoted fail. Charity seeketh not her own. In that chapter we are at one, ever beloved darling, and on it we'll part friends. Its verses will stand fast when all the rest that you call religion has passed away. Well, don't discuss it. Goodbye, Jude, my fellow sinner and kindest friend. Goodbye, my mistaken wife. Goodbye. The next afternoon the familiar Christminster fog still hung over all things. Sue's slim shape was only just discernible going towards the station. Jude had no heart to go to his work that day. Neither could he go anywhere in the direction by which she would be likely to pass. He went in an opposite one, to a dreary, strange, flat scene, where boughs dripped, and coughs and consumption lurked, and where he had never been before. Sue's gone from me, gone, he murmured miserably. She in the meantime had left by the train, and reached Alfredston Road, where she entered the steam tram, and was conveyed into the town. It had been her request to Phillotson that he should not meet her. She wished, she said, to come to him voluntarily, to his very house and hearthstone. It was Friday evening, which had been chosen, because the schoolmaster was disengaged at 4 o'clock that day till the Monday morning following. The little car she hired at the Bear to drive her to Marygreen set her down at the end of the lane, half a mile from the village, by her desire, and preceded her to the schoolhouse with such portion of her luggage as he had brought. On its return she encountered it, and asked the driver if he had found the master's house open. The man informed her that he had, and that her things had been taken in by the schoolmaster himself. She could now enter Marygreen without exciting much observation. She crossed by the well, and under the trees to the pretty new school on the other side, and lifted the latch of the dwelling without knocking. Phillotson stood in the middle of the room, awaiting her, as requested. "I've come, Richard," said she, looking pale and shaken, and sinking into a chair. "Cannot believe you forgive your wife." "Everything, darling Susanna," said Phillotson. She started at the endearment, though it had been spoken advisedly without fervor. Then she nerved herself again. "My children are dead, and it is right that they should be. I am glad almost. They were sin-begotten. They were sacrificed to teach me how to live. Their death was the first stage of my purification. That's why they have not died in vain. You will take me back?" He was so stirred by her pitiful words and tone that he did more than he had meant to do. He bent and kissed her cheek. Sue imperceptibly shrank away, her flesh quivering under the touch of his lips. Phillotson's heart sank, for desire was renascent in him. "You still have an aversion to me?" "Oh no, dear, I have been driving through the damp, and I was chilly," she said, with a hurried smile of apprehension. "When are we going to have the marriage?"
"Soon?"
"Tomorrow morning, early, I thought, if you really wish. I am sending round to the vicar, to let him know you are come. I have told him all, and he highly approves. He says it will bring our lives to a triumphant and satisfactory issue. But are you sure of yourself? It is not too late to refuse now, if you think you can't bring yourself to it, you know."
"Yes, yes, I can. I want it done quick.
Tell him at once. My strength is tried by the undertaking. I can't wait long. Have something to eat and drink then, and go over to your room at Mrs. Edlin's. I'll tell the vicar 8:30 tomorrow, before anybody is about, if that's not too soon for you. My friend Gillingham is here to help us in the ceremony. He's been good enough to come all the way from Shaston at great inconvenience to himself. Unlike a woman in ordinary, whose eye is so keen for material things, Sue seemed to see nothing of the room they were in, or any detail of her environment. But on moving across the parlor, to put down her muff, she uttered a little H, and grew paler than before. Her look was that of the condemned criminal who catches sight of his coffin.
"What?"
said Phillotson. The flap of the bureau chanced to be open, and in placing her muff upon it, her eye had caught a document which lay there. "Oh, only a funny surprise," she said, trying to laugh away her cry as she came back to the table.
"Ah, yes," said Phillotson.
"He licensed, it has just come." Gillingham now joined them from his room above, and Sue nervously made herself agreeable to him by talking on whatever she thought likely to interest him, except herself, though that interested him most of all. She obediently ate some supper, and prepared to leave for her lodging hard by. Phillotson crossed the green with her, bidding her good night at Mrs. Edlin's door. The old woman accompanied Sue to her temporary quarters, and helped her to unpack. Among other things, she laid out a nightgown tastefully embroidered.
"Oh, I didn't know that was put in," said Sue quickly.
"I didn't mean it to be. Here is a different one." She handed a new, and absolutely plain garment, of course, and unbleached calico. "But this is the prettiest," said Mrs. Edlin. "Hat one is no better than very sackcloth, oh scripture."
"Yes, I meant it to be. Give me the other."
She took it, and began rending it with all her might, the tears resounding through the house like a screech owl.
"But my dear, dear, whatever.
Dot. It is adulterous. It signifies what I don't feel. I bought it long ago to please Jude. It must be destroyed." Mrs. Edlin lifted her hands, and Sue excitedly continued to tear the linen in two strips, laying the pieces in the fire.
"You meant to give it to me," said the widow.
"Tea do make my heart ache to see such pretty open work as the day burned by the flames. Not that ornamental night rails can be much use to a old woman like one. My days for such be all past and gone. It is an accursed thing. It reminds me of what I want to forget." Sue repeated.
"Tea is only fit for the fire."
"Lord, you be too strict. What do ye use such words for, and condemn to hell your dear little innocent children that's lost to ye?
Upon my life, I don't call that religion. Sue flung her face upon the bed, sobbing. H, don't. That kills me. She remained shaken with her grief, and slipped down upon her knees. I'll tell you what, you ought not to marry this man again, said Mrs. Edlin indignantly. Who are in love with the other still? Yes, I must, I am his already. Sue, you be the other man's. If you didn't like to commit yourselves to the binding vow again, just at first, 'twas all the more credit to your consciences, considering your reasons, and you met all lived on, and made it all right at last. After all, it concerned nobody but your own two selves. Richard says he'll have me back, and I'm bound to go. If he had refused, it might not have been so much my duty to give up Jude. But she remained with her face in the bedclothes, and Mrs. Edlin left the room. Phillotson in the interval had gone back to his friend Gillingham, who still sat over the supper table. They soon rose, and walked out on the green to smoke a while. A light was burning in Sue's room, a shadow moving now, and then across the blind. Gillingham had evidently been impressed with the indefinable charm of Sue, and after a silence he said, Well, you've all but got her again at last. She can't very well go a second time. The pear has dropped into your hand. Yes. I suppose I am right in taking her at her word. I confess there seems a touch of selfishness in it. Apart from her being what she is, of course, a luxury for a fogey like me, it will set me right in the eyes of the clergy and orthodox laity, who have never forgiven me for letting her go. So I may get back in some degree into my old track. Well, if you've got any sound reason for marrying her again, do it now in God's name. I was always against your opening the cage door, and letting the bird go in such an obviously suicidal way. You might have been a school inspector by this time, or a reverend, if you hadn't been so weak about her. I did myself irreparable damage, I know it. Once you've got her housed again, stick to her. Phillotson was more evasive tonight. He did not care to admit clearly that his taking Sue to him again had at bottom nothing to do with repentance of letting her go, but was, primarily, a human instinct flying in the face of custom and profession. He said, Yes, I shall do that. I know woman better now. Whatever justice there was in releasing her, there was little logic for one holding my views on other subjects. Gillingham looked at him, and wondered whether it would ever happen that the reactionary spirit induced by the world's sneers and his own physical wishes would make Phillotson more orthodoxly cruel to her than he had erstwhile been informally and perversely kind. I perceive it won't do to give way to impulse, Phillotson resumed, feeling more and more every minute the necessity of acting up to his position. Flew in the face of the church's teaching. But I did it without malice prepense. Women are so strange in their influence, that they tempt you to misplaced kindness. However, I know myself better now. A little judicious severity, perhaps. Yes, but you must tighten the reins by degrees only. Don't be too strenuous at first. She'll come to any terms in time. The caution was unnecessary, though Phillotson did not say so. I remember what my vicar at Shaston said, when I left after the row that was made about my agreeing to her elopement. The only thing you can do to retrieve your position and hers is to admit your error in not restraining her with a wise and strong hand, and to get her back again if she'll come, and be firm in the future. But I was so headstrong at that time, that I paid no heed. And that after the divorce she should have thought of doing, so I did not dream. The gate of Mrs. Edlin's cottage clicked, and somebody began crossing in the direction of the school. Phillotson said, Good night. Oh, is that Mr. Phillotson, said Mrs. Edlin. Was going over to see. I've been upstairs with her, helping her to unpack her things, and upon my word, sir, I don't think this ought to be. What, the wedding? Yes. She's forcing herself to it, poor dear little thing, and you've no notion what she's suffering. I was never much for religion nor against it, but it can't be right to let her do this, and you ought to persuade her out of it. Of course everybody will say it was very good and forgiving of E to take her to E again. But for my part I don't. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.